Many times I've used the analogy of a high school cafeteria when describing the music industry. It's a world of suspended adolescence, and people quickly lock into their respective subgroups. I hate it. The popular successful music groups, the critics' darlings, the wild hooligans, the king and queen of the prom, and of course, the square pegs, the freaks, and the losers. I was so happy when high school was over, but entering the music industry, I was shocked to find out it's actually high school on steroids. Being part of the hard rock world, you were immediately branded as a square peg. Too heavy to become a critic's darling, too lightweight for the jock metal world, and too straight for the freaks. Of course, this analysis is all based on insecurity and anxiety with a modicum of intuition. But we're talking about an industry that relies heavily on the egos of people, most of these people being beyond redemption, might I add. This feeling of rejection I've felt throughout the years and being cast out within the music industry in certain circles is by now very calloused, but can still sting years after high school has closed its doors. However, being a square peg in this music industry makes it easier to find other square pegs, and it's probably why I can't get enough of Devin Townsend. Devin was last on the podcast a couple of years back, episode number 157, when we had an uproarious conversation at the Grass Pop Metal meeting in Belgium about touring, being Canadian, ripping on people, and I walked away from it with a quiet acknowledgement that we were cut from a similar cloth. Oh, don't think I'm getting a big head. I don't mean a similar musical cloth. Compared to Devin, I have no game. He makes musical masterpieces as fluid and easy as I sing out the word baby in our songs. But what I mean is a similar attitude and approach to this music industry. Of course, it seems appropriate the next time he's on this podcast is during the NAMM show, the yearly trade show of music gear, music products, music equipment. It attracts musicians and fans alike. As exciting and fun as it can sometimes be, it's also a place that's riddled with delusion, conceit, and sadness. I think people like myself and Devin are quick to suss that out and see it more in the foreground than most. Talking to Devin here in the heart of NAMM, the heart being the parking garage of the Hilton Hotel attached to the convention center, was energizing. It made me feel a lot less lonesome knowing there was someone else out there who could sense the absurdity of their surroundings. Don't get me wrong, I had a lot of fun being at NAMM, and I do plan on attending again next year. As hilarious and as sad as it can get, it's also quite humbling and gave me a different perspective as to how many people are striving to do what we do, which is be in a band, play for people. I got a renewed sense of gratitude to go along with my usual snide comments and smugness. When we started production on our new album, A Rock Supreme, with Garth Richardson out in Vancouver, Devin made a stop by the studio to say hello and hang, and I'd like to think his presence bestowed the album with some degree of positive musical energy. Indeed, it is our best album to date, so it's a theory that's hard to argue. At the time, Devin was just about starting work on his own new album, which is out now, called Empath. Well, that's turned out to be a monumental slab of artistry. It's an album that sounds like if Queen had a baby with Meshuggah. It's grand, it's Herculean, and it's wild to think that while we were working on our cute little hard rock tunes, Devin had this masterpiece brewing in his head. If there needed to be a Canadian ambassador of music, I couldn't think of anyone more suitable than Devin Townsend. I submit his new album, Empath, as confirmation. Hearing it fills me with pride that music so utterly godhead actually emanates from someone based out of Canada. And for as musically gifted as Devin is, he is equally down-to-earth and easy to talk to, as this podcast episode and his last podcast appearance proves. A warning to all listeners, this episode gets a little techie at times and a little industry insider a bit, but it's a fun chat. And Devin's a laugh. Okay, here goes. The one and only Devin Townsend is on the podcast, and it starts. Oh, wait a minute. Please keep those reviews on iTunes coming. And thank you to everyone who has left one already. I read them, and I love them, and it makes the podcast look great. So thank you for making the podcast look great. Okay, take two. Devin Townsend returns to the podcast, and it starts now. The Daniel Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Daniel's co-host. They love for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes. Timmy in from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down. It's the greatest podcast from coast to coast. Coast to coast. And I say the Dunco Jones podcast makes me feel.
Gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready because the Danko Jones podcast starts. No!
Well, Devin, this is your second appearance on the podcast. Last time it was in Belgium at Grass Pop. This time we're in a parking lot somewhere in Los Angeles, California. Yeah. We're at NAMM.
Yeah.
You strike me as one of the poster boys for NAMM. In fact, you are on a huge fucking giant poster that I saw today.
Yeah. I mean, I think that my trip, because I've... I gotta get my head together after this onslaught of human interaction. I think, you know, most of my work has happened in the States and in Europe, as I'm sure it's similar with you.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, and because of the type of music that I do, you know, I haven't really altered my course, and so my audience has stayed with me for 25 years and grown, and for the most part, they're employed. And I think as a result of that, these companies know that, you know, if I'm doing something, there's a certain level of authenticity to it, and the audience tends to buy it.
Right.
So it's, you know, I'm a poster boy, not for goodwill alone, but I think...
it's well earned, definitely.
Yeah, and I also got to be careful with that as well, because, you know, if you put your name on something that's just a piece of crap, and then people end up supporting it, you know. But, I mean... I've been doing NAMM for quite a while now, and I got some good friends here. And it's a chance for me to not have to answer the last 6 months of emails. Because when I come here, I can do it in person. I hate emails.
Oh, I see.
You know? Right. It's like I've got all these ones like from 6 months ago, like, we should do this, or, you know, here's a question on this. But when I get here, I just spend the first couple of minutes of the conversation apologizing, and then I'm good for another year. You know what I mean? I don't have to answer another mail.
Well, I got to thank you because you came into the studio, Garth's studio at the farm, before we really started tracking, and then you had the Evertune on your guitar.
Yeah.
And we were just so blown away. You gave us a little kind of demonstration.
You ended up using it.
Garth got one done. He now has three. And I got to say, it really does help with the performance on an album.
Dude, and live. Are you using them live?
No.
Dude, you got to use them live. That's the best possible use of that technology, man. It's just, we flew in to Summer Breeze Festival, and it was midnight, and we were late, so we had to load all the stuff. It was pouring rain. We just straight off the flight.
Yeah.
And then when I got on stage, my guitar was perfectly in tune. It's like we didn't have to change it, didn't have to intonate it. The neck was already wonky because of the temperature thing, but still in tune. So it's like if you throw your guitar up in the air, or if you like hit the drums with it or something, it's like your guitar will still be in tune. And there's something about that live that's just great for vocal pitch, I find, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it locks you in.
Yeah.
But I noticed it too, and when Garth had one done, you know, a lot of people will knee-jerk and say, oh, it takes the
you know, it makes sure. It robotic. But no, it doesn't. It makes you play way more at your. I don't have to tighten up when I'm strumming or when I got to do something. It's so freeing.
Yeah, no, I agree, and it's. But I mean, I think that's a lot of the reason why, you know, on the technological side of things, I've been fairly proactive, because there's a goal in mind. There always has been. So when it comes to working with an instrument manufacturer or a pickup company or Evertune or amps or any of these things, I've got an end game to everything, and I think that end game is of practical value for other musicians as well. So. For example, this guitar that we worked on with Framus, or this acoustic that we did with Prestige, which mm-hmm. is, you know...
Yeah, that's right. So you're with two companies.
Yeah, so I have a non-exclusive deal with both of them, right? And it works. And but then I think when people start playing these things, they're like, oh, that's why you did that cut there. And, you know, when you're touring, I know that your tech is going to be bummed out if your input jack is in an awkward position and the barrel jack is like the long one as opposed to the short one because they're harder to get in Slovenia or whatever. So a lot of the instruments are a means to an end that's rooted in a practical sort of application. And I think that can benefit a lot of people because, you know, not a lot of folks get a chance to do what you and I are fortunate enough to do. And with what we do, there's certain realizations we're going to make about our tools that you're just not going to have.
Yeah.
And I think that that's probably another reason why these companies choose to sort of want to have artists represented, because it's based in solving problems, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, when they get someone like you, what's it? No, but what's inferred is like all the time is buy this guitar, play like this guy. It's how it is. I mean, it's part of advertising and promotion.
I think there's probably a certain amount of that, but I think that there's also another part of it that's just a collector mentality. Like people who are like the same people who want to buy the box set or want to buy the vinyl or anything like this. It's if you've put your heart and soul into making something, which I think if you're going to work with a company, you'd be foolish to not. But I think there's a lot of that happens. People just slap their name on something that pre-exists.
True.
But I mean, with the stuff that I work with these people, I get a lot of times people will buy that aren't players or what have you. They just kind of want something that is, you know, collect the whole bunch.
Yeah, yeah. I've never figured that out, but I understand.
Probably because you weren't like it, though, right?
No, I'm not a gearhead.
Yeah.
Like listening to you and Garth just talk just now about some board he bought, and
sure.
and watching the look on your face as he kind of describes something that sounds like another language.
Yeah.
Although it's all in English. I don't compute.
Well, I think it's just it's what your interests are, right? Like I don't like sports. You know what I mean? And I don't like politics. But I think it's like if your interests are put in a place where you've got a sort of an emotional connection to it, for whatever reason,
yeah.
then I think it's less of like a fetish and more of, again, means to an end. And the guitar player that is now working with, Mike Keneally is his name, and he's like... Zappa and like really brilliant dude, has no use for gear and is just a phenomenal musician. And when I press him on that, he's just like, I'll play whatever they put in front of me. And I think it's less of a an issue than maybe I had thought in the past. Like people either like it or they don't. For me, because I just found myself after 30 years, I couldn't get the right engineer, I couldn't get the right singer, I couldn't get the right producer. Like every time I tried to work with somebody, the vision that I had was just articulated incorrectly. Like everybody would say to me, you can't mix Metallica and Enya, or, you know, like take these sort of disparate styles and make them work. And I'm like, no, I know we can. I absolutely know we can. So after several failed attempts at getting a singer, I was like, fuck it, I'll become the singer. And so as a result of that, in order to be the best singer I could, I learned it to the level that I do now. And then I think with production, it's very much the same. So my interest in gear is not fetishized. I don't have a lot of interest in it. But
I never get the vibe that you do when you talk about gear. You and, you know.
Yeah.
I don't feel that.
It's tools. But then again, you know, it's the same thing. It's like my dad really likes a certain type of wrench. You know, and you can fetishize that too, right?
No, that's the mentality for sure.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the difference between fetishizing it and an interest in it is if it's got an end. I think if it doesn't have an end, it's a fetish. But if there's an end to it, it's like, in order for me to achieve what it is I'm trying to achieve, I'd like, you know, a certain type of thing in the high end. I'd like a certain type of distortion, you know, and that's where it goes for me.
I always describe a guitar as just, it's just like a hammer to me.
Yeah, same.
Or a wrench. Like, I just need it to get to point B, the sound that's in my head.
Same with me. Now, here's something I'll throw at you as devil's advocate. My buddy and I were doing a jam, and I had a pedal board that I spent a bunch of time on, and a digital rack, just like this fractal axe effects. It's fucking brilliant. And my guitar with it, that's always in tune, right?
Yeah.
And he was not negative against it, but he's just like, dude, I can use whatever's here. I can use whatever's here. But I've got my rig so I can fly with it. It's under 25 pounds. It's got every possible thing. It's very easy to access. But there was a certain amount of, like, bravado from him where he's just like, dude, I'll use whatever's here. But his shit was buzzing. He wanted another echo. He couldn't get another echo. It's like he wanted a phaser, couldn't get a phaser. But meanwhile, it's like, having gone through the process of sort of thinking of the the situations that may arise, I've got this tool that allows me to chop all sorts of stone as opposed to just granite.
Well, I think that's that comes from just plain old insecurity.
In which way?
From him.
Oh,
from him just saying, like, I'll use anything.
Yeah.
And then having to troubleshoot everything.
Well, that's it. But I think that's the thing, is it's because we kind of got into this situation where he was kind of giving me the gears about this gear that I had, right? Yeah, and I'm like, look, man, it's like, if it burnt down in a fire, it's fine. It's not like my life's going to change.
Yeah.
But here's the thing is, dude, in a pinch, I can do everything I need to do.
Yes.
Plus, I don't pay overage, like, for the flight. Right. You know what I mean? It's all there. And it's like, I can use my in-ears. It's...
No, I understand that.
So this works for me, man. It's like, but...
It's just... people don't realize that.
My music's a lot nerdier than yours, so... I think there's a certain amount of, like, sweep arpeggio shit that goes on in my trip that I think lends itself to this sort of, like... You know,
don't count me out, though. Don't count me out.
Never.
I can do sweeping arpeggios through power chords.
Can you?
No.
All right. That's great. No, it's all just funny, man. It's like Comic-Con for guitar players. What I've been doing.
Yeah, this. Yeah.
Oh, dude.
Oh, my God.
I've been taking photos with people. Like.
Really?
Yeah, I've been taking photos of people. I'm like, oh, this fucking guy, right? Like,
I'll
show you the guy I got today. He was my favorite. I was just...
You gotta do how Vice magazine used to do, like, what they're wearing.
Really?
And comment on their clothes on the street. They used to take photos of people, and then comment on their clothes.
This industry's so small, though, that it may end up being somebody that you work with, right? Like, I hope not. Dude, look at this guy. Like, what a gong show. You know what I mean? I like to think that his hair is attached to the hat.
It's like a Halloween costume.
That's it. He, like, washes it in a vat, and it's, like, hanging in the backyard. It's like cats are clawing
but
at it.
Now, this is a theory, is the people who are dressed up to the tits, like they just walked off some sort of Broadway show, they're the ones who are not in a band. And the people who are actually in a band working, making it happen, are, like, with their hats over their, just, like, their hoodies are on and just getting to the booths.
I find that there's the one demographic of working musicians that's the most toxic are the ones that are, like, they're in the intermediate level, where they're not beginner, where they're hungry for it, and they're not successful to the point where they, like, don't need to prove themselves. They're, like, they're the ones that have got this practiced kind of, like, disdain.
Yeah.
You know, their girlfriend's carrying around their guitar for them, and they're, like, got some crazy stupid leather jacket, and they're, like, bitching about the catering and all this sort of thing, right?
Now, I give those bands, every band gets a window of that.
Yeah.
You get a certain window where you can get all that shit out of your system.
Yeah.
You know, like, you never had it, and you got, like, a nice right. I always say on one of my rants, you know, in the van or the dressing room or something, like, these guys, they just fucking get a one good live review, and they walk around with their fucking chin up, and they think they're the shit. You get a little sliver of a window open to act like an asshole, and once that week or two is over, get your shit together. And,
oh, yeah, man. I think it's best to get that out of the way very early.
Yes.
Because then you can also rationalize it based on youth as well. You can be like, oh, I was a kid, and blah, blah, blah. It's same with drugs. I always felt it's like, you know, if you're gonna go on a bender or something, you got to get that out of your system before you get a lot of attention. Because I think at that point, the microscope that all your stupid ideas and beliefs are held under, people are actually, to some degree, paying attention to it. So if you're riding the cusp of a manic episode and then just go full blown once you get your first live review, man, yeah. It's like that's it, man.
it's interesting. I you know, now I can step back and see all these people and you laugh. I mean, I saw like these three people, and they're like, you know, they're 20 years old. They're at NAMM, dressed to the tits. They're wearing makeup like they just stepped off jamming with Kiss 77.
Yeah, they're there every year, man, I think.
Amazing.
Have you been here before?
That's the thing. I've never been here before.
It's a mess, man. It's like the psychological effort that this level of hyper social vigilance that comes into just these constant interactions, the amount of effort that takes to shed after this is done is just like a week and a half, man.
Yeah, I know.
And someone described this in a really great way. It's like 75 of your favorite people in the world and 100,000 of the worst people you'll ever run into.
That's a good description.
It makes perfect sense, man. Maybe there's a couple of thousand in the middle there too, right? But it's... But I think I started coming to this thing in 90... I think the first one was 94. And so it's been many, many years of this. And because what I do has a good reach and it's got a certain throw, but because the industry's changed in such a way that for me, a lot of the advertisement I get now is through these companies that I work with. So,
right.
So a lot of like the guitar, right. You know, it's like they do tons for me. And for somebody who does something that's as niche as I, it's a brilliant way to do that.
Yeah.
But it's also it's a lot of compromise because it is such a small industry, and all these people know each other and fuck each other, and it's like this little incestuous thing.
Yeah.
So you got to be really careful if you become too liberal with your desire to accept free gear. That's what happened in the beginning for me. People say, we'd love to give you an amp, we'd love to give you a guitar, we'd love to... And then before you know it, you're just thinking, oh, they're giving it to me because I'm a swell guy, as opposed to, no, this is how they sell their product, and there's something that's they're gonna need from you, whether or not it's a video or an ad or what have you. Yet if you've taken instruments from competing companies, then at the end of it, you just look like a whore. So a lot of times now when I get into relationships with people, even if they want to give me something, I'm like, well, I work with this guy. I'm monogamous in that sense. And even with Framus, you know, the guitar company I work with, I'm like, I'll work with you for electric guitars, but not for acoustic guitars and not for bass. And then I work with those other ones and I let them know ahead of time as well. It's like, I'll work with you for acoustic guitar and I can promote that. But I can't do anything in terms of electric guitar, and same with amplifiers or plugins or software or any of these companies I work with.
It's like, well, here's the thing: how deep do you go with each of these companies? Obviously, they put you on the cover of the poster, the top. You are in the forefront of that giant cutout that I saw.
But I mean, it's like,
so you go deep when you make a commitment.
Yeah, I commit. So. Pickup company I work with, Fishman. I got a signature pickup, but I went down to Boston and I did the designing and the programming and everything with Larry Fishman and his whole group of people. We ran through prototypes for a year, and then it's got a number of things about it that really work for me. With the electric guitars, I've been to Markt & Kirsten in Germany maybe 9 or 10 times, to the factory. I designed the body, like took it on tour for a year. I got the weight that I wanted. I got the contours I wanted. I changed where the pickup selector was like 6 times. The strings that I use, it's every company. I did a pedal. I went to China last year and I did this delay pedal, but I design. It's my design. It's my not a patent, but it's my ideas. I've got a whole litany of ideas now that I'm sort of courting certain companies for as well. But it certainly has to come in a way that there's no compromise, right? Because I get offered things from companies who are like, well, we'll do this for you. We'll make a pedal. And I was like, okay, well, here's what I'm looking for in an overdrive. This is what irritates me about overdrive pedals. You know, it's like maybe there's a mid-hump that affects the way that it hits the front end in a certain way. or whatever, right? And they're like, okay, well, we can't do that, but we can take this existing one and put your name on it. You know what I mean? And I'm like, yeah, well, you got no interest in that. Because, again, I think that the thing that has allowed me to have a career for as long as this is because the audience knows that I'm not full of shit. So if I'm selling them something, it's like, well, why are you putting your name on this? I'm like, well, because I went there and I dealt with it.
I did not know you and Ginger.
I think this is the thing that has defined what I do in a way, because when I was a kid in Vancouver, you know, like, it's not punk, but, you know, Vancouver, sort of no means no, Daigle Abortions, all this shit. It was like,
especially Daigle.
Yeah, and that's what we grew up with, and I loved it because it was like, it was funny and like they didn't give a shit and whatever. And that was like the scene that I grew up in, but I I really knew how to play guitar. So it was like one of these weird things that, like, my buddies were like, yeah, dude, you can't fucking
dumb
do that.
Down.
You gotta dumb it down, dude. And I'm like, but at a certain point, I'm like, well, what would be more authentic? For me to dumb it down for people who I like hanging with? Right. Or just being like, guys, this is what I do, man. Right. I fucking think it like orchestral shit. You know what I mean? But that attitude is like, that's why Ginger and I got along, because I'm like, but I'm coming at it from a different point. Like, I'm like, I like the orchestras and the choirs and the fucking crazy tech and all this shit, but I still want it just to be like chaos. I want it to be like fucking a mess.
Yeah.
So we get along on that level, but I think now it's an interesting thing, like with the gear companies, because, you know, now I've got this career that is so invested in you know, theory and all this sort of shit. But where the root of it was still the same shit, man. It was like,
they should bill you Devin Townsend, formerly of the Wildhearts.
Yeah,
playing our
they
brand
do.
New
they do concert. Sometimes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, in the UK. I mean, that's why it did really well for me in the UK, right? Because it's like,
oh, they're seen as, in some circles, they're seen as kings.
I gotta see if I can find the pictures too. I had a shitty fucking mohawk, and I was like, I just sang on the Mutation record too, like the new.
That's another. See that. Yeah. Okay, now I can bridge the gap because I love his Mutation albums.
Yeah. Well, that was...
And that makes sense in your world, too.
Well, that was because... Yeah, this was us in 98, dude. Like, holy fuck. Like...
God, yeah, that is wild.
Yeah, dude. Like, we were like... We went through... Yeah, there's me and the Wild Hearts.
See, wow.
Dude, we were online, too. It's all these videos.
Just, I gotta look it up, man.
Oh, shitty. Oh,
yeah.
Worst possible... Gotta be in that bad, man.
Well, that makes sense that you're part of... I love the Mutation albums he makes.
Yeah, that's cool.
And that, to me, would immediately... I would make me think that those would live more in your world.
Well, I mean, I'll only say this because he had said it to me, but I put out a record in 98 that affected him heavily, 97, called City, the Strapping and Lad record.
Oh, yeah.
And he wanted to do that at the time, so... Mutation, I think, was, and Endless Nameless was two things that were directly influenced by that period, and that's when we spent a lot of time together, right? Because but we were both in Japan for fucking tons of time together, dude. It was so unhealthy.
That's wild.
It was great.
I don't necessarily immediately think of you two like,
oh yeah, I think
partnering
more
up.
We got to know each other.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure.
It's just I know how to do the sweep arpeggios, right? Like, it's just, you know what I mean?
Right.
That's
right,
all.
Right.
That's the only.
The only difference.
Really, I mean, it's like, and he got laid in high school, which is why he didn't know how to do sweep arpeggios, right? Because it's like those of us who didn't, we're just like, fuck it, I'll just do this, right? But that's why it's like,
just because I can't do them doesn't mean I was getting laid.
That's a good point. Well, this is why I actually have a hard time with the scene that I find myself in sometimes. I'm like, I don't relate a lot to the guy. I mean, some bands I do, but there's not, I mean, of the years of touring, there's like maybe three dudes that I talk to on a social level, you know? Just like people that you've toured with, and you're like, oh, I like that guy. I get him. He's cool, right? And then the rest of them are just like, you show up and you're like, holy fuck. Yeah. And then you see him here every year.
Right.
You know who's playing in the lobby here tomorrow? Tiffany. I'm just saying.
That is what I like. That's
right?
The part of Nam that I do like.
That's
what I like.
I was making this assumption that she was like going to be like torn fishnets and like a cigar martini in one hand. You know what I mean? Just like shot sitting on a bar stool. I think we're alone now.
No, she was in what was it? Sharknado versus. She was in a film with Debbie Gibson.
And it was like a Sharknado?
It was Sharknado versus Godzilla or something.
Yeah, I heard about that one.
Yeah.
That's a cinematic record.
I've got it on Blu-ray.
It's a good,
it was $5, but I still bought it.
You know what? I think I saw one of the Sharknado and it's exactly what it said it was going to be.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think at first. I was like, nah, it's not going to be a tornado with sharks. Yet, it's what it was.
Exactly the description.
I have to think of like what went into the conversation when they were like trying to pitch it.
Yeah.
Okay, here we are, boys. Here we are. Okay, it's a tornado, right? You know them, right? Ooh, it's full of fucking sharks. We got a deal, boys. You know it. Well, bring Debbie Gibson and Tiffany in, and we'll talk.
Nah, I don't think we're gonna go for it. All right, let's sweeten the pot here.
Yeah, totally. We'll get them both. In the same,
right.
We'll have like a battle at the end, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like Mecha Debbie and Mecha Tiffany, and they just like, oh, that'd be sick.
Well, that's another reason for NAMM for me that was great is, although I missed him, he appeared twice at NAMM, is Oz Fox from Striper.
Really? He was sick or something.
Yeah, there was some sort of accident, but he made two appearances.
Okay.
One today at 12:30, and I missed them both.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's NAMM in L.A. for me.
Oh, but no, I know. It's like you find him in the front. It's like, that's the third bass player from Cinderella. You know what I mean? Like,
that's
he's over there getting
love.
A beer, right?
That's what I love.
Yeah. I find it so hard that... I'm sorry.
No.
I find it really sad. Like, when you see people that are like... Maybe I don't find it sad. I don't know what I find it. This year, I find it more sad. Because I feel that politically, socially, economically... Everything's in such turmoil that no one buys it anymore, which I think is really healthy. And not that no one buys it, but the facade has grown much thinner. So a lot of times when people are here, it's like past years, everybody's like, ah, we're in bands, yeah. Check out my leather jacket, my fancy pants, and, you know, go fuck the A&R lady from, you know, whatever. You know, stay in tune strings. And it's this big thing that's got this aura of... the illusion of what the music industry was at one point, still sort of like, but now this year is the first year, and it's awesome. It's like the first year where everybody's kind of got this like uneasy sense that this is all bullshit, and I think it's really healthy in a way, you know.
I love it, I can't tell because I love it, and I know that it's bullshit, but I love just getting caught up in it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not buying into it, obviously.
No,
look at me.
But I mean, it's like... But it's like... I don't know, man. I think at a certain point, you gotta cut your hair. That's how I feel. As a dude, like, if you're like, rolling into your 50s, and you still got the same duds that you were wearing when you were 25, man, like, you don't have good friends at that point. Like, no one's telling you.
They steered you
bro, right. Man, you look a mess.
You got a lot of yes men.
You got too many people telling you what you want to hear.
I always go when I'm passing by these guys at NAMM, and they've got, like, stringy long hair, and they've got leather skin.
Yeah.
I just go... Who's that guy? Do I know that guy?
Yeah, I think that's exactly why they dress that way, right? It's like, I like the fact they all smell like sandalwood or something.
Yeah,
vanilla,
man.
Or some sort of weird.
It, man. Yeah. I love it. It smells like you think you're somebody.
Delusion.
Awesome, man. That's great.
Yeah. That would be great. What a great the NAMM fragrance.
Oh yeah.
Delusion. No, I just, but the leathery skin, and it's like those are the guys that are getting their girlfriends to carry the guitar. Like, it's like 9:30 at night and they got their shades on, bumping into walls.
Oh, yeah. I know.
That sucks. I have a hard time with shades. I have a real hard time with sunglasses.
Same with me.
I hate it.
I have to wear them now.
I know. Well,
I do.
Why? Why?
Because I have a buckle in my right eye, and I have another condition in my left eye.
So you have to wear them.
I have. I was told by my optometrist.
Do you feel? Do you feel douchey when you're doing it?
I feel totally douchey.
That sucks.
I wear these. It's not prescription.
Yeah.
But they're like anything to shave.
That's all right. Those are risky business. Is what those are, man. Those are like the Tom Cruise.
Yeah, aviator type. Yeah, I gotta take because you wear glasses. I gotta take this for the rest of my life. Oh, I don't. I have it at the house, but Ocuvite, these vitamin pills.
Oh, okay.
For your eye.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, I just, I have a hard time when I can't see somebody's eyes because I'm like, I don't know if they're lying to me. You know what I mean? It's like, so this guy came this guy came up to me a couple of years back and he's like, hey, Randy, remember me? He's got shades on. I'm like, no. I was like, you know, I'm like, maybe it's the sunglasses, man. So he takes his glasses off and he's got like this eyeball that's just like going bananas, right? And I'm like, so in that sense, I'm thinking to myself, like maybe you need to wear them, right? Like maybe that's why people wear them. But Leather Boy there with like his, you know, 48-year-old girlfriend that is like got an inch and a half of like pain makeup on her, is like walking four steps behind this fucking asshole Karen, is like,
have you seen that?
Oh, dude, oh my god, just loathsome human beings, right? Luckily we're so great.
Luckily we rule, man.
Luckily we rule. We're sitting on the fucking floor in a car park at NAMM.
We're keeping it real.
This is what we'd be like at the school dance. Right? Dude, those jocks are like just, they don't even, they can't those even hang.
Losers, man.
Totally losers.
So alright, I was the only one.
That's what we'd be doing. Yeah. I think that these things are just a microcosm of high school again, man. Oh, yeah. It's like, yeah. You know?
It's so true.
Sucks. We're on the back of the portables, right?
It's so true.
Oh my god.
It's funny because I was at the Dime Bash yesterday.
Oh yeah.
And you know Chris Jericho?
He was on the last record.
Really?
Yeah, he's on my last record.
Fuck, man.
Yeah, we're buddies. We're on a text thing together. He sends me fucking horrible images. He's a good dude, man. I did his podcast.
Yeah, he is a good dude. I just messaged him.
Yeah.
After today on Twitter.
So you know him as well.
I do. He was on my podcast.
Fucking awesome.
So he's end of the night. He's having a good time.
Yeah.
And he comes up to me. Someone introduces him. And, oh, yeah, Danko, how's it going? And I go, cool, man, how's it going? And then he saddles up to me, puts his arm around me, whispers in my ear, oh, I'm doing okay. I'm from Toronto. I don't want to talk to anybody. He says that to Chris in my ear because he's like, he totally knows what a Canadian behaves like. And in the L.A. kind of like, he totally got it.
No,
and I laughed because I'm like, you totally know who I am.
Well, not only that, I get the impression that I get the impression with him because, you know, he's popular and he's doing all these things, but I get the impression he was awkward in school. And I think that's actually why I find him endearing as well, because his tenacity has put him in a position where he's had success and all these sorts of things.
Yeah.
But again, I can't help but think that, you know, maybe in high school he'd be back here too.
I totally think that. Like, that's also, I mean, if there is a tying thread between the three of us, we're very introverted, extroverted type people.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, like, I said something about Kick-Axe, right? And he starts on cue, he goes, Kick-Axe! He's just yelling at the top of his lungs.
Oh, really?
In front of everybody. He starts singing Kick-Axe.
I can't do that. See, that's why he could be him.
Yeah, but then someone came up to us going, oh, what are you two Canadians, you know, blah, and he goes, yeah, we're singing Kick-Axe songs.
Yeah.
So my message to him today, you know, remember the Killer Dwarfs?
Yeah, of course.
So I go, and don't forget, keep that spirit alive. And then he answers back, well, you gotta do something. Like, it's, he's definitely a fucking super fan.
He is a super fan. I get that impression. I mean.
I love that.
Yeah, same, man. It's just...
Fuck, I didn't know he was on your last record.
Yeah, dude.
Is it the one you were about to start when you came into the studio?
Oh, it was two ago. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean...
Yeah, he's a great dude, man.
Well, he works with a guy, like, in the mid-90s, I produced this band called Stuck Mojo out of...
And there's dudes in Fozzie.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, that was a connection, and it's just... And I did this Ziltoid thing where I was looking for this superhero.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need some guys like Zap Brannigan. And my buddy was like, you should get hold of Chris Jericho. So I called Rich, who was a guitar player. I was like, would you ask him if he would do this stupid thing? And he did. And he put on a pair of leotards and like acted like a superhero.
Wow.
Yeah, it's cool, man.
Well, I mean, just the fact that maybe I'm just projecting my own Canadianese on him.
Yeah.
I could see like similarities
with. He's from Winnipeg, right? Like.
Yeah. But it's funny, like he's busting on Toronto. Well, I don't want to talk to you. I'm from Toronto. It's so funny.
Oh, I get it. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that was the thing. He's just busting on Toronto, and just I just thought
it's a West Coast.
It's so cool. I thought that was cool, you know.
Yeah, man.
But anyways, yeah.
It's good to see you here. I think it's, you know, there's a lot of times people are that come to this are overwhelmed in the first bit of time that they're here. Yeah, but as a part of what we do for a living, it's a really healthy attribute to have these relationships maintained, I think. As long as we don't, like, vomit our resume on people as the first thing when you meet somebody. That's what I find here. It's so fucking brutal, right? It's like, oh, this is Buddy. It's like, oh, hey, yeah, so basically my record came out last week, and I did a thing with him, you know, and you remember that guy who had that thing? Yeah, well, I'm his buddy, and we're working with him, right? He was on my last record, you know, Chris Jericho? But it's like...
I approached you. I went with
it too far. I was thinking to myself, like, oh, fuck, I should have stopped there. It's like weird, man. But... that's cool, man.
No.
Here we are. This is the Canuck Corner, man.
I really wish someone would take a photo of us here. I would use this to promo the episode. Oh, but anyways. No.
We should get somebody to do it.
Really? Anyways, Devin, thanks for this, man.
Sure.
Thanks for your time. I know you're super busy. At NAMM, they're pulling at you from all sides.
I gotta get this one. Here, let me get a photo, right?
Okay.
I'm gonna ask this guy over there. This is the most Canadian thing we've done so far, by the way.
It's
like
know.
Being afraid to ask somebody. For
so, do you want to ride home? Give me a ride home.
I heard a great Canadian joke. How do you get 30 Canadians out of a swimming pool?
No.
Time to get out, boys.
All right. Anyways, Devin, thanks a lot for this.
Yeah, it was awesome. You too. Yeah, thank you very much again for having me, buddy. 6 years ago.